My name's Joni Patchy, and I'm the education chair. And I want to ask all of you, we're going to pass this microphone around. And when it comes back to me, then we'll kind of describe our purpose here today. Okay, so let's introduce everybody. Everybody introduce themselves and tell me what you're currently doing, whether you're a student or you're working or you're having fun or whatever you're doing.
Hi, I'm Lena Dawes. I'm the education vice chair, and I am just a busy person. I am a Braille teacher. I am a psychology student and a kung fu student.
Hello, good morning. I'm Daryl Dawes. I am a worship leader and a business administration student and also a kung fu student.
Good morning, I'm Ron Bateman. I'm a retired special education teacher. I guess that's about all I do. I do some volunteering sometimes.
I'm Connie Bateman, and I'm a former teacher of the visually impaired. Now I'm teaching ESL, English as a Second Language, at Elk Grove Adult and Community Education Center, which is part of the Elk Grove School District.
Good morning. I'm Jeff Tom, and I'm a retired legislative attorney. And in one of my CCB hats, I am the volunteer director of governmental affairs, which is why I'm here this morning.
Okay. Hi, I'm Juliana Harris. Oh, I'm sorry, I hit the microphone on that. I'm the vice president for the Humboldt Council for the Blind. And I'm also a senior at Humboldt State University, and I will be getting my degree in computer science this year.
I'm Leslie Tom, and I am on the CAC for School for the Blind. And just a consumer of education, and we had a visually impaired child, which we still do, except that she's not a kid anymore. yeah, she's already in college. So that's it.
I'm Andrea Slavin, and I was asked to come talk today. I recently retired after over 40 years in the field of visual impairment, and so I'll look forward to talking with you in a few minutes.
Back to me. I'm Joni Patchy, and I am the chairperson of the Community Advisory Committee at the School for the Blind, and your education chair. And I, as far as my work goes, I'm a vendor, and I have two, almost three locations that are going to be combined into one, two snack bars and what they call a wet stand that will be combined. And so I'm busy. And the purpose of this meeting today, let's just discuss this a little bit. I feel very strongly that parents like us, I have had two children that are visually impaired. Now they are also adults. And I often am asked to help parents figure out what their children need, the IEP, what children are supposed to, what we're supposed to do, what the parents are supposed to do. And as advocates, I think it's good to update our brains, so to speak, and to figure out what we really need to know in order to be knowledgeable and conscientious advocates for children who need special education, who need who could be either multiply or just visually impaired. But for that reason, it's really important to me to know what I need to know and where I'm going with this advocacy. And also Jeff Thomas here, he is going to give us some legislation that we want to work on a little bit of wording for. And then Andrea Slavin's going to help us with the knowledge that we need to be good advocates. Thanks.
This is my exercise this morning. This is good. I need it.
All the way from Yolo County? Is that where
you are? No, I live in the north area.
Okay. So, okay. This mic is, it's a good thing we're in a small room because the mic is not really picking up very well. So there's a bill, which was one of our legislative imperatives for the year, AB 455, and that bill, which is really a no-brainer in terms of what it does, the bill would, you know, several years ago, on a task force that included people in this room, such as my wife, two task forces, actually, adopted Braille standards for reading and math. Since then, national standards have been adopted by states, including California, for all students in all sorts of core curriculum subjects, such as, you know, reading and math and other subjects. So the goal of this bill is to align to change the Braille standards that were adopted by the Board of Education after these task forces met, and to align those standards with the core standards that are applicable to all children. And this, of course, is pretty easily supported, as we obviously want our kids to be subject to the same standards that others are. So the reason that I'm here today, though, is to get your input on a minor part of the bill, and I have two questions, which I'll get to, related to one of the things that they did in the bill is that they said that prior to these standards going for the board, to the Board of Education for adoption, they're going to be looked at and dealt with by a, quote, group of experts. And there are two, and we are able to meet with the author's office. This is the Department of Education actually is sponsoring this bill, and the legislator who is the author is going to meet with us. And I have two questions about whether we want to change some work, offer some amendments to it. And the experts include advocates for Braille. And so we would be able to have seats at the table in this task force. So that's not one of the issues that is coming, that I am bringing to you. The issue that I seek input on, I'm also going to go to our Governmental Affairs Committee later today, is that the language refers to having the task force comprised of 50% of VI teachers. There are two questions that I want input. Is that too high? And one can argue yes or no. I just want to hear input from this group. Should it be is that a percentage that we don't want in there, given that we think other people have other input to provide? And as a totally separate question, do we want some language that specifies that those teachers need to somehow be currently engaged in the teaching of Braille? Because as we know, there are a lot of teachers that, even if they know Braille or they did get instruction in it, aren't teaching it. So those are two separate questions. I'll repeat them if anybody wants me to, but now I just want to go around, or whoever wants to, I'm opening it up for discussion to the extent Joni would allow, so that I can get answers from you on what you think we ought to do on these, with respect to these two issues. Yes, the first question is the 50% of teachers something we can support, or do we think that's too high? And second, should we ask whatever percentage, whatever the question, answer to the first question is, should we specify that there be some language that says that with respect to these teachers, they need to be ones that are, you know, currently engaged in the teaching of Braille, so that we know they're really on top of the use of Braille, and that they live and breathe it, rather than just those who got it in school and decided they don't like teaching it. Okay. Are you going to be our mic runner? I don't know who wants the floor, but...
This is Andrea. Jeff, I have a question about that. Is there some concern that people would object to adding what I consider necessary language about making sure that those teachers currently are engaged in the teaching of Braille?
I don't think the author, I think the author is amenable. You know, I we haven't met with them yet. Mm-hmm. They seem very amenable. We were the one organization that came to them that was supportive of the Braille. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going to be amenable to sitting there. They agreed to make an appointment with me and sit down and listen to our amendments as a complete organization. And so I think, I don't think there's a problem at this point. I don't foresee a problem in them accepting the test.
Oh. Okay. Test that the teachers can take too that would also show that they are competent and proficient in Braille literacy?
There is, but there are fabulous teachers that haven't taken it, and they just haven't gone about doing that. So,
I'm just wondering if that might be a substitute for someone who's not currently actively teaching it, but is in, interested in being advocates for Braille literacy.
Well, the advocates are us, so that's
I have a couple questions. Jeff, what's the size number of this committee?
It isn't specified. It's a group of experts, so mm-hmm. It is not specified.
Now, what I gather is that the state standards for reading and math or something like that, you're trying to decide whether you want them equal or modified or what?
Well, the Braille standards would have to be modified.
Mm-hmm. Is there something that says that they want it? They don't want this, or what?
No, I don't think. I think the bill, its substance, is really a no-brainer. I don't see any opposition to this. Really, the question is what we want the group of experts.
When you said 50%, what was that number referring to again? 50% of teachers teaching Braille, you said?
Well, it doesn't. I don't think it specifically says they have to be teaching Braille. That was the question I threw out. Do we want something more specific?
I think 100% of teachers should be prepared to teach Braille.
No, that's not the question. The question is, on this group of experts that's going to be working on the standard, which will include advocates for Braille, and that's where some of them seem to be with them. Mm-hmm. It says 50% of this group has to be teachers of visually impaired. The question is, do we want it to be more specific that says these teachers have to be engaged in teaching Braille or have to be, are there some kind of modifier that we want so that we ensure we don't just have any old BI teacher who may not have cared about teaching Braille for the last 20 years.
I think so.
Okay. I'm thinking about teachers of the visually impaired. Now, when my kids were in school, they were so busy that they didn't have much time. I wonder how much time this is going to take for them to work on a task force like that. So I'm kind of thinking you might have to, they may have to limit some, teachers are very, very busy, and we don't want to pull them too much away either from the kids they need to teach.
Thank you.
We're asking about time. How much? Okay. I do agree that I would like to go on record as saying that I would hope that the teacher had a passion for Braille.
There are some caseloads that teachers have that they don't have for however many years or months students who are academic Braille users. And I would hope that they would not be ones that would volunteer to be on this committee. And my suggestion is you put the language in, then as the bill goes through the legislature, if it becomes a big issue, then you come back and decide. But you start off with everything you want in there. And there's ways that those legislative people can word it so it's not talking about people who don't believe that children should have Braille, that need Braille, and that kind of thing. They can word it properly and start with it, because, I mean, you're taking the thunder out of my talk, because that's the first thing, is printer Braille, and the idea, if it's a question, of course, it's you automatically do the Braille. The teaching of Braille. So start off with it. It's an important issue, and I would hope that teachers would not volunteer. And teachers are going to be on the committee, as Leslie was talking about, if they want to. They'll make the time, because Braille and teaching of Braille is probably the most important issue that we have, because that's literacy. So start off with it. Have them put the language in.
So I would like to introduce Andrea Slavin. I see no problem with 50%. I think that's okay, because those are the people that teach our children, that teach the children that know best what they need.
What does teachers include? Mobility instructors? Does it include paraprofessionals? Does it include maybe people who are administrators, like in Los Angeles, you've got hundreds of teachers of vision impaired, and the administrator, like Joy Efron, utterly fantastic in support of Braille.
Well, if we refine the language, of course, that would change the answer to your question. If we refine the language to say that teachers had to do those that work actively for the teaching of Braille, that would change.
That would work. That would work. I think that's a good way to put it.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. Thanks, Jeff. And now I'm going to introduce Andrea Slavin. Andrea Slavin has worked for years and years in the San Juan District, teacher of the visually impaired. She had my kids when they were in preschool. And how old is Paul now? Paul's 26. So I remember those days of potluck, parent potlucks. And she kept the parents very involved in her classroom. And I'm so glad that we're friends. And I'm not going to say any more. She's going to say the rest. And here's Andrea.
Well, an advantage of teaching children who are visually impaired is, as Joni says, years and years, is they don't see my wrinkles or my gray hair. Of course, to young children, anything over 25 or 30 is old. So your discussion that you just had is really what I'm going to talk about, because there is a disparity among districts in terms of how teachers involve themselves with educating parents and other people. And I'm not getting into individual districts. Fortunately, I have worked with districts in Southern California, in Northern California, that are very supportive. But part of it is the theme of what I'm going to talk about is it's your job to educate people. As a teacher, part of it is my job, but you as people who are visually impaired, as parents, as residents of your community, you are the ones that educate. I have not heard enough people say it is a cane, not a stick. Things like that. And that happens, and that's not because people are mean. People, they don't know. And it's very easy to correct. So I have five things I want to talk about. But before I do, I want to let you know. I know Lena said she needs to leave at a certain time. And if you do need to, just go ahead and go. I don't mind. I don't take it personally. Because I'm hoping we'll have more of a roundtable discussion on these things. Because I'm preaching to the choir here, but we have to keep talking about certain issues because it's like a wave motion. Sometimes the spotlight is on making sure we have adequate resources, that we have competent people teaching, that we have the Braille in the forefront. And then sometimes other things come up and we don't forget, but it goes on the back burner. And then we have to light the fire again. So if you need to leave, go ahead. Joni asked me to talk. I retired in June after 40 plus years, mostly in the field of visual impairment. I worked in the field of developmental disability, which is really an advantage because we have so many children that have multiple issues. And so it's good to have the background. So when Joni asked me to talk about what are the things that I would have liked to have talked about, I would have liked to have said to parents, well, people like Joni who know me well say, I said it anyway. But there's ways to say it, and that's one of the main things I want to talk about is how we go about making sure that people have the information. There are five things. The first thing is the Braille or print issue. If there is a question with a child whether they need to learn Braille, if it's a question, then it's not a question because it means that they do need Braille. Now, some children, like with retinoblastoma or other kinds of visual impairment, that their vision is not stable, it is even more important. They have the background. They become at least fluent enough in Braille, and then they may choose for a while that print is what they're using, but they have that background because there is a chance they may be using it and they need to keep it up. So there are ways to advocate for that. But the main thing is, if it's a question, then it's a no-brainer. They do need to learn Braille. They need to learn it as young as possible. When I started in the field, if the child was under 5, they got nothing. This was before PL 94-142, before the Rehab Act and all of that. I got in the field because I had this history teacher who knew a retired teacher who was working with 2 blind children on the weekends. And she needed some help. They were in a class of the only 2 blind children. This was the time of the oxygen in the incubators, and so they had no other issues beside the visual impairment. So I learned Braille. I kept sort of one step ahead of them every week. This was before Sally Mangold on how we learned Braille, so it was the scrubbing, it was all of that kind of thing. Then the Rehab Act came in, and the Education for All Children Act came in, and it changed things, because they were just brought to school, they were there, they played games, they did things, but the idea of Braille wasn't done. Well, I knew it wasn't right, and a number of other people knew it wasn't right, and so we worked hard with the family to convince them that they should go to Berkeley. At that time, the School for the Blind was in Berkeley, because that was the only chance they had to learn Braille, to learn those things. So I got involved very, very young with the whole field. But the printer Braille, the second issue is that I can talk to families, I can talk to educators about without telling them. Some people believe, and I'm not one of them, that 100% mainstreaming is how children learn the best way. Well, Phil Hatlin, who some of you know who Phil Hatlin is, when he was in California, I was fortunate to have him as a professor at San Francisco State and knew him. And he wrote a fabulous paper talking about responsible inclusion. And so that's one of the other things that I felt like I was on a soapbox with people, is full inclusion for many children who are visually impaired is dumping. They don't learn through osmosis. No one does. Sometimes full inclusion is a detriment. Now, the full inclusion movement, I think, started mostly for families, parents of children who are developmentally disabled, autism, and they had some issues, and they were not as academic as many children were. And Phil Hatlin was in an era where we had the children who had too much oxygen, and he had dozens of children as students that were, vision was the only issue that they had. Intellectually, there was no question of their ability to learn. So the second issue is that how do we convince people that 100% mainstreaming is sometimes not the least restrictive environment? And the reason for that is sometimes it takes a little different kind of learning in order to ensure that you understand. And sitting in a classroom listening to someone sometimes is not the only way. The third issue, and the issue that, as the state of California said, I've had too many administrators say to me, if you think the extended core curriculum is that important, make it a law. Because it's not a law. It's just it's a suggestion. It's the recommended way to go on what should be in a curriculum. And things that are in the extended core curriculum that we need to continue to advocate for, and we need to continue to put goals in, even though we have our districts and our teachers will say we don't have time, how do we put that in there, are things like
learning to listen